I've never had anything like this happen to me.
A personal check cashed by a man she'd never met.
I opened this up and I look at it and I said, I didn't write a check. Who is this person?
After postal workers get robbed on the route.
It's escalated greatly the last several years.
This week on Open Record, arrow keys, acetone, and one victim's message to thieves.
If you're not working, find a job.
From the Fox 6 studios, this is Open Record. I'm Brian Polson, and I am joined by Open Record's executive producer, Sarah Smith. Hey, Sarah.
Hi, Brian.
We are also joined today by Fox 6 reporter, Bill Mistin. Hi, Bill.
Good morning.
We are recording this episode on Thursday, May 11th. It was about a week ago, Bill, that you reported on what seems to be a growing problem for U.S. Postal Service delivery workers. Gun-toting thieves have been targeting them in the middle of their delivery routes, but they're not after what's inside the mail bag or even inside the mail truck. They seem to be after something that may be even more valuable to them. Let's talk about arrow keys. What are arrow keys and why are thieves targeting postal workers to get them?
Well, it's something that many people might not be familiar with, but they're keys that you probably have seen the lock cylinders for them over the years if you've used the blue post office boxes that are out on, you know, a number of street corners. There's tens of thousands, if not millions of them across the country. And these mailboxes and other types of mailboxes use special keys. And that's what the letter carriers use to get into them to take mail out and take it on for processing. And so these special keys are what prosecutors and investigators say that thieves have been targeting. And it's not that this is a recent thing. This has always been something that has been an issue for letter carriers. But when I spoke to the union, it's definitely something that has increased recently in time as far as what letter carriers are being targeted for.
So the story that you did initially focused on this crime ring that was busted. Bunch of people taken into custody associated with these crimes. So they targeted mail carriers, many of them, most of them in broad daylight. So what happened after the robberies? And then, you know, how did they kind of target the mail carriers? How did that all work?
Again, we're putting on our hats of we're familiar with how the Postal Service works. You put mail in a mailbox or you have mail delivered to your house, and these letter carriers are going around and dropping off mail, picking up mail. And so this is something that they do most times during the daylight hours. You know, in talking to the union, one of the issues is that they have too much work to do and not enough people to do it. So letter carriers are on longer routes, and it takes a longer amount of time for them to finish delivering their mail. So sometimes they might be out after dark, depending upon the time of year. So what's been happening is that these letter carriers are ambushed, they're stuck up at gunpoint, and these robbers are demanding the keys. And so they get the keys, and then they take off. The next part of this, in reading court filings and understanding how this works based on interrogations of suspects who have been arrested and charged with these types of crimes, is they take the keys and then they go around to different mailboxes and they steal the mail from those blue mailboxes. And the purpose is to find checks that have been mailed by people, to steal those checks and to wash them. You're taking checks and you're applying a chemical to these checks to remove ink that has been put onto the checks by the person who is filling it out. And then they have a clean check that is a valid check. And then they fill it out to a name and they take it to a bank and they cash that check.
So when they go into these blue boxes and these keys are universal keys, I take it, right? They can open any of these blue boxes. Is it any blue box anywhere, or are those keys specific to a territory, or how does that work?
Yeah, they're specific to a territory. So to take a bird's eye view of this, a key for a mailbox that is on a letter carrier's route who is in the Park Lawn post office area, which is at 35th and Capitol, that key from that area won't work in, say, Chicago or other places in Milwaukee. But it will work in areas for which that letter carrier has access to and needs to gain access to certain mailboxes.
So they get the key and then they go and they pull the mail out of these boxes. You said they're looking for checks. So we're talking old-fashioned checks where people are writing their name out in ink and the whole thing. And then they've got, Sarah mentioned this crime ring. There was a lot of evidence recovered when police busted this crime ring. Several people who were working in concert to not only target the mail carriers, but then to work on washing these checks and then to fraudulently cash them. And Bill, for according to your story, this worked really well for them up until now, at least, because they were able to make a significant amount of money doing this, right?
Yeah, and what was interesting was when police raided a home of this specific crime ring in January here in Milwaukee, they found hundreds of checks, and what was noteworthy was how much money was sitting there in written checks. It was more than $500,000 that presumably was waiting to be taken off to whichever bank that they would take them to and to cash them. And one interesting aspect of this is we know that for some of the people that were charged in connection to this more recent crime ring, and I'm using recent loosely because a number of the suspects or defendants that are alleged to have been part of this crime ring have been arrested over months and months time, going back to October or November, and then as most recently as April of this year. So it's been a long, wide-ranging investigation, but also where these checks would be dropped off. By reading the tea leaves of charging documents, it appears that investigators were onto this ring for some time and they were building a case against them. So what happens is law enforcement knows that criminal activity is being done and they're letting alleged criminals continue to do certain acts that would indicate that they are committing crimes, and they're getting evidence of those crimes. And one of these instances is that checks were cashed at banks up in Brown County in Alloway and Green Bay, and people traveled from Milwaukee up to Brown County to cash those checks and then returned.
So one of the victims of these acetone wash checks, you sat down and talked with her. So how did you, A, find her? And then, you know, what's her story? How did she end up becoming a victim?
Well, I have to give credit where credit's due. Ashley Sears, one of our coworkers, had been in conversation with this woman on and off for some time. And when Ashley knew that I was working on a story specifically about this, she reached out to me and said, you need to give this woman a call. She's got a great story. And so what Jacqueline Banks was doing, she's 69 years old. She lives in Milwaukee, and she lives near the Park Lawn post office that I mentioned earlier. And so back in the fall, she had written a check. She is a cancer survivor, but she's still getting treatment for cancer all these years later. And she had written a check for about $50 for her treatment, written it out to Aurora Healthcare and put it in one of those blue mailboxes. And she's very diligent, she says, about checking her bank register and making sure what her balances are. She does it old school, handwriting it out. She doesn't do a whole lot of online banking. And for months, the check never posted. The check never posted. She would call Aurora, she would call the bank, and that check never posted. So they suggested, well, maybe it got lost in the mail, to which she thought was absolutely ludicrous, because maybe we've experienced things getting lost from time to time, whether it's packages we've had shipped to our homes or offices, and, you know, regardless of the delivery service, but even the postal service. I mean, you have to commend and think about the amount of work that they do every single day and how they're able to get the wide variety of parcels and packages where they need to go. And she absolutely laughed it off, saying, "How would you suggest that the postal service lost my check?" Well, fast forward a couple months, she sees that her check has been cashed. It's in January. She sees where it was cashed. It was cashed at an ATM in the Twin Cities, written out to a person she had never heard of, for an amount that she didn't write out for. In the memo line, it said it was for a paycheck. She says, "I don't pay anyone. My son takes care of my lawn, and it's January. I haven't had any housework done." And then even on the signature line, they spelled her name incorrectly when her name is right there on the check. And she was flabbergasted. And so she goes to her bank and waits and waits and tries to explain the situation. And then eventually they're like, "Well, you need to go file a police report." And, you know, conveniently enough, the police station was right across the street from a bank.
You know, you mentioned something, Bill, that I think is interesting, because the check is in the mail, it must be lost. It almost feels kind of like the dog ate my homework, where it's almost like it seems like an excuse, it's something made up. But for these people this has happened to, you have no way of knowing, is that what happened to my check? Until this fraudulent check is cashed, and then it's like, oh, now I can see what happened. But I'm sure it's a surprise to many people who have been victimized by this. You put that check in the mail, you assume it's going to get where it's supposed to go.
And what's interesting is, I mean, this isn't the first time we've done a story about someone who has reached out to us and said, "I've been a victim of a scam, or I've been defrauded of my money. My check was cashed and it wasn't for what I made it out for." Even after we've done this story, I've had people from elsewhere in the state, not just in this area, but they've seen this story and they've reached out to me because they're still in limbo. Thankfully, after, you know, a lot of hard work on Jacqueline Banks's end, complaints and filing police reports and, you know, doing her due diligence, eventually she was refunded that couple $100 that was cashed out of her account. But for some people who've reached out to us, they're still in this limbo period where they're out thousands of dollars.
And the people doing this, I thought it was really fascinating, because some of these cases can be taken to federal court because you've got people traveling to different areas. You've got the mail service being used. One of the defendants, I believe it's Hussein Haji, is currently being prosecuted in federal court. And in that case, it came out that this crime ring, they were so bold and so sort of proud of their criminal activity, they gave themselves a name. Is that right, Bill?
Yeah, they gave themselves a name called the quote-unquote Scam-ily, instead of family, a Scam-ily. And that came out in a detention motion by the federal government for Hussein Haji that was filed late last month. That didn't make it into part of our story. But what is interesting is this is one of the individuals that prosecutors say was part of this crime ring that we used as a focus as a part of this story, that it was a financial enterprise, that, you know, there was money to be made not only on checks, according to the government, but also if you look at the filings, that there were Instagram accounts created to be used to sell merchandise for this group of individuals. And so a number of these sweatshirts with screen printing on it, with the Scam-ily logo, were found in a search of a house by police back in January. And this is as a part of this investigation that they're building a case. And Hussein Haji is not one of the people who prosecutors allege to have been the ringleader of this. That would be another individual, but there was, you know, guns, ammunition, and checks, chemicals for washing the checks, for removing the ink from the checks, found among other items at this home in the Harambe neighborhood back in January.
So you mentioned that this is something that obviously isn't a new thing. It's not a new crime. And it's not unique to Milwaukee. It's happening across the country. So obviously, you know, the big thing is the threat to not only the mail, but the mail carriers. And so what do, you know, what does the mail carriers, what do they say about it? What does their association say?
Well, what the Letter Carriers Association, the union here in Milwaukee County says is, you know, this isn't new. We've experienced this for a while. Check washing is not new. I think maybe most people, maybe people of my age, became aware of what check washing was because of that 2002 film with Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks, Catch Me If You Can, where Leonardo DiCaprio played a con man, Frank Abagnale, who would pretend to be different people, but he would also wash checks. And that would be removing the ink from checks. And so this isn't a new thing. This has been around for a long time. There, people have been cashing fraudulent checks for presumably as long as checks have been used as a form of exchanging money.
That's Bill, that's kind of part of what strikes me here is that because this is something that's been going on for a long, long time, I mean, checks are kind of old technology, so to speak, right? I mean, as a method of payment. And physical keys are in many ways an old technology. I don't use a physical key to get in my car, to get in my house, or to get into the building here at work. I still occasionally use physical keys, maybe to get into my individual office. But so many things now are in some way electronic codes or key fobs or buttons. Is there a solution here for protecting, whether it's the Postal Service protecting its workers and protecting the mail, or people protecting themselves, where it could just be maybe don't rely on sort of the old way of doing things?
I think we have to, again, take a look at like a 40,000 foot view of, you know, where things are. And at the end of the day, it's a simple technology that works and it's cost effective. Now, the Postal Service says that they're going to be rolling out additional measures, security measures, safety measures for letter carriers. And could that include some sort of two-factor authentication or requiring another way to get into these mailboxes? It's possible, but we don't know those details yet. And you then have to think of the cost of that. It's been a concern for many years that the Postal Service is underfunded by the federal government. So how would something like that be rolled out to the millions of mailboxes that are out there? Would certain mailboxes only be using a two-factor authentication type of method? Would it be electronic? How would you power it? So there's all those different logistics that have to be thought about. And that's one of the things that the letter carrier says. There's no real-time solution right now to try and solve this or harden these targets that thieves are targeting.
You know, everyone kind of asks, okay, so now what? So I use those blue mailboxes. I, you know, drop if I have holiday cards or something, you know, a one-off that maybe I just don't want to put in my own mailbox, you know, with the flag up. Now, granted, I'm very much a put it in the slot and look and make sure it went all the way in. It's not teetering on the edge. But what is the takeaway for us, you know, people like you and me? So, you know, are they safe? Should we be worried?
Well, what the Postal Service and letter carriers say is, you know, the best way to ensure that your mail is secure and going to get where it needs to go is to try and post it within the post office. If you're worried about your mail being stolen, then try to avoid using the blue mailboxes. It's not to say that the blue mailboxes are all going to be, you know, mail from those mailboxes are going to be stolen. But to post your mail inside the post office rather than maybe using a blue mailbox. Or if you're going to use a blue mailbox, there's times of when the mail is scheduled to get picked up. So maybe try and post that mail closer to that pickup time. You know, also to look out for your letter carriers. They're walking up and down your block every single day. Get to know them and keep an eye out if you can for if there's vehicles that seem to be following them or strange vehicles in the neighborhood that you don't normally see, to look out for them, because that, from the letter carrier's point of view, you know, they're out there doing their job and they're targets of this. And so sometimes people don't see what happens. And to be able to have people to help them out and keep an eye out for them is extremely important. As far as protecting yourself, if you are mailing checks, ballpoint pens aren't the best type of pen to use when writing checks. If you use a pen that physically has ink in it, like a gel ink pen or some other kind that will soak into the paper of the check, those are more secure than using ballpoint pens, because that type of ink can be more easily removed. So those are just some tips. But then also, really maybe start to do online bill pay and online banking. Granted, that opens up a whole other set of concerns that people may have for, you know, protecting yourself when it comes to your financial information and it being online in some way, shape, or form. But either way, just like Jacqueline Banks did, you know, she was diligent about checking her checking account frequently. And when she saw that there was something there that was amiss, she immediately went to her bank. You know, there was a red flag there, and she went to her bank and started to say, there's a problem here and we need to address it. So check your bank to make sure that there aren't any fraudulent activities going on.
You know, Sarah, you said, oh, well, I use those blue boxes. And I was actually wondering how many people still use them. I can't remember the last time I put a piece of mail in one of those blue postal mailboxes. But it seems there's certainly a convenience factor. There are a lot more of those that you can drive up to and drop something in the slot than there are physical post offices where you have to get out and go stand in line. And then you have people in front of you who maybe have packages and you're in a hurry. So I get the convenience of it. It seems to me, if you're, number one, don't use a ballpoint pen. I never knew that, so that's good advice, Bill. But don't use a ballpoint pen. If you're using a personal check or something that you really think security matters on this piece of mail, maybe that's the one to take the extra time and go inside the post office to have it delivered. Does that seem to kind of be the overall takeaway, Bill?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's a good time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual and have a little fun by answering a question for which we have not prepared. But of course, Sarah Smith has prepared, because she has the question for us. So what's in store today, Sarah?
All right. So we're going to have a little scenario here. You have been kidnapped. 2 hours later, your kidnapper returns you because you don't stop talking about what?
I love just the setup, the scenario of this, that you are going to annoy your kidnappers terribly.
That's what So what do you talk about for 2 full hours? And they're like, okay, I'm gonna take you back.
Boy, the thing that would probably annoy them, although I don't think I would do this, but if I did, talk about Cardinals baseball, and it's like Milwaukee kidnappers, and they're like, enough, stop it. That's too much. For me, it probably would be, talking about like inane things about projects I'm doing around the house, the yard. Boy, I've been working on that deck in the backyard for 13 months. Let me tell you about the
polyurethane.
Let me tell you about the priming and the painting we just did, and how I had to try to time that out with the weather. No, that might drive them nuts.
Okay, Bill.
I would maybe have to say tax increment financing districts.
I already returned you.
Or my personal disdain for using of public dollars for funding private businesses like sports teams and stadiums.
Would that just come up though? Like you, if somebody kidnaps you and you'd just be like, let's talk about the, let's talk about money for American Family Field here. You know, would that just come up, or are you more likely just in, like, you're trying to kill time in general conversation? What's the most likely thing you would probably bring up? Would it be like, well, we're stuck here in the van together. What should we talk about? Water skiing? I don't know. What would it be?
Well, I don't want the guy to like me. Because I want to go home.
Right.
Because I do want to go. I do want to go water skiing or go ride my bicycle. And then I don't want him to go, oh, you know, then we could become friends. I mean, maybe it's an opportunity for me to leave, but.
You're thinking strategically. You're like, I'll bring up tax increment financing because no one's going to want to listen to that for hours on end.
Correct. No. Correct.
Well, that's interesting.
And all of the percentages, you know, and how much, you know, how much rebates or taxes are cut off of the entity's property taxes because of, you know, what percentage of investments they're putting into a property that they're rehabilitating. So I don't know if they may tire of that. You know, I mean, to what degree is this kidnapping occurring? You know, like to what level are we talking? Ultimately, I'd like to survive. So,
if it's strategic, if we're trying to annoy them, I probably talk like pivot tables and Excel formulas or something, right?
Ew.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Let's talk about nested if statements. I don't know. Sarah, what about you?
Well, now, see, I had my answer. And now after this TIFF and the Excel spreadsheets, I'm like, I think my answer is not going to be good enough. They're going to keep me. I was going to say air fryers.
I talk about air fryers.
So much. And I feel like, okay, so, I mean, I guess based on Bill's theory, yeah, maybe I should come up with something a little bit more boring. Maybe not boring, just different.
I wonder, it's funny you say the air fryer thing, though, because I wonder, people who have them, like I have, people who have them love them. And I do wonder if people who don't have them are sick of hearing the air fryer people talk about how great air fryers are.
I'm really sick of this conversation right now.
All right, so if the kidnappers are listening, they've already stopped. Yeah, I don't know, air fryers are great. And you're right, the people that don't have them hate them and hate people that talk about them, so... I just have to bank on the fact that my kidnapper doesn't have one and hates people like me.
This sounds like a type of conversation where, how do you know a person does CrossFit?
They tell you they do CrossFit.
They tell you they do CrossFit. How do you know someone has an air fryer?
Because they will tell you
they
all
talk
about it.
Their
but
air
here's
fryer.
The thing: when air fryers first became a thing, I part of why I didn't want to have one is because
it's because
I was,
everyone had one, right?
No, it was because I thought they were for. Taking traditional fried foods, like so you can make healthier French fries and healthier cheese curds or something. I don't know. That's what I thought it was limited to. What I never understood was, no, it's just convection cooking. It's just a better way of cooking stuff and making it really crispy and delicious and whatever. And so you can make all kinds of foods. And that's why I end up talking about it is you wouldn't believe all the things you can make with the air fryer. And pretty soon I'm doing an infomercial for Kasori.
That's what I'm saying. I'm a spokesperson.
Yeah.
Bill, what's your address? I'll mail you an air fryer.
I don't need a toaster oven with a fan on it.
But you know what? I will tell you the first time you come home with leftover fries and you're like, what do I do with these things? And you put them in the air fryer and they're better in day two, you will want one as well.
Well, here's the thing. Don't be coming home with cold fries.
Well, all right. That's a fair point. But when you can make broccoli actually seem like something you want to have, that's a magic machine.
I know. When Bill gets fries from his favorite stadium and has to bring them home, maybe that his taxes have helped to fund, he will want an air fryer to crisp up those fries.
I'm not bringing fries home from a sporting event.
Fine.
That's just sad. That's just extremely sad.
The kidnappers have just kicked us out of the van.
yeah, they're gone.
Bill, thank you for coming on to tell us all about this story. Great reporting, and we appreciate you taking the time.
You're very welcome.
If you have a topic you would like us to discuss on Open Record or an issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, send us an email to fox6investigators@fox.com. As always, thank you to the people who make this podcast possible, including, of course, executive producer Sarah Smith. Thanks, Sarah.
No problem.
And our editor, Dave Machuda. Please subscribe to Open Record if you haven't already. You can find it wherever you do your podcast listening. With that, I'm Brian Polson. We'll be back next week.